Accession number 38636, Mr. Malcolm Barker, Reel 4. Now, we're talking about your time, you know, in basic training at Worley Barracks, Brentwood, from June through to August-ish, 1953. How did you get on with the other lads? You've mentioned about they were all from different backgrounds.
Yeah.
And also, but you also said that they were in different groups at the start. How did it all gel together? How did you get on with them?
Well, what it was, as I say, us who were what we called the normal working class people, then you had those that had the higher grade, what's name, and they always thought they was a bit above you because their dads were bank managers, they was somebody in higher up and they had money and you didn't, but it used to cause a divide between them. Now, also, when I went in there, I met up with two brothers that lived in the next turning to me, and I didn't know they was coming to Worley Boat, Brian and Roy Palsy. So we was together, and I don't know how it come about, we was down in the canteen, Naffy as you call it, and we sat here and I'd sit there. So Corporal walks in there and he looked around, he thought, well, why is that group sitting there and that group sitting here? So he went up to one lady, he said, well, why aren't you mixing with them? Oh, they reckon we're common. They're above us because their dad's bank managers, and they reckon they're going to be officers, and we're just the ordinary cannon fodder. Says, no, he said, you should be working as a group. He said, because if you don't gel as a group, you're not going to get anywhere. Come kit expression, come what's name. So apparently Sergeant Francis, he was like a father. He was your mentor.
I will come back to it. But did it work? Did you get closer with
afterwards? After we had a good talking, they wanted to know why we were segregated. He said, you may think you'll become officers, but somewhere in this group, there's a bright spark, or one or two bright sparks, and they may become officers before you, because you've got arrogance where they're down to earth. So after another few, and we all gelled together, type of thing.
And did you actually make mates with some of the more toffee-nosed ones, if you like?
Yeah, because I was struggling a bit. What was his name now? Forget what his name was. But he's quite a nice bloke, well-educated. He said, what's the trouble, mate? I said, Malcolm, do you? He said, oh, I'll call him Peter. Just, what's his name? I said, well, I'm having a stroke. So I couldn't read or write so much. I said, our school was bombed and all that. I said, no excuse. I said, I'm just... Oh, he said, come on. He said, we'll sit at a table and I'll tell... And once that started, then one or two other lads came round and that's how we started the gel. And I knew about army... setting up army equipment like belt buckles and packs, and they didn't because they was more college boys and they had no idea. So where they helped us with our writing and reading, we helped them with their equipment, and that's how it started the gel together.
Now, from the sound of it, there was no bullying. That does sound...
No bullying at all.
Is that right?
One or two riffs, you know, yeah, you common lot, you know, and you stuck up so-and-so. Other than that, no. There wasn't one that used to say, you get that done, you do this. None of that, no.
So more the odd dispute rather than...
Yeah, I think it was what they call class dispute. Because daddy had a car, daddy had a big house, you come from a council, what's name and all that business. I think that was where it was different type of thing. But when as the sergeant said, when it comes to a battle, you're all one. And if you can't rely on each other now, you won't do if you ever get into action.
Now, did you make any special mates during...
Well, I made three. There was Stanley Harper, Roy and Brian Palsy.
So they were all local lads?
Stan Harper, he came from Stratford. Roy and Brian lived in the next turning to me.
So the ones you made real pals with were the same background as yourself?
Yes,
still.
Yes.
Now, what about Sergeant Francis? You mentioned him a couple of times. Tell me, what was so good about him? He was like a mentor to you, said.
Yeah, he was, put it this way, he was tough but strict. He could listen and advise. But, as he said, I can only advise you what to do. I can't do it for you. But I'm here. If you need me for anything, home trouble, medical trouble, anything, he said, just come to the, get permission to come over to the married quarters, and if I'm not busy, I will see what I can do for you. Stuff like that. And he was like a father. You looked up to him, you respected him because of his war record and all that business, and that was what he was like. Take you to one side, say, well, you're not doing it properly, you're not doing this, you're not doing that. And very
so
good.
He was good. He knew his stuff as well.
Yes, yeah. Yeah.
What about the other instructors?
Some of them were a bit, shall we say, a bit sharp, a bit blunt. I've got a stripe, I'm in charge. But as one of the Corporal Pritchard, he'd done service in Korea, he'd got blown up in Korea, and he was one of our corporals. And he was saying, don't take no notice of him. He said, he's not very long been made up and he's filling his boots type of thing. He said, he has a lonely position as a Lance Corporal, he said, because the sergeant gives instructions to me, I give instructions to him. He said, when he gives the instructions to you, it depends how he instructs you and how you feel whether the job gets done. He said, it all falls back on him. He said, so sometimes they can be a bit, you know, abrupt and blunt type of thing.
Did they swear much? I mean, there's always this perception they swore. Did they swear much?
Only if it was necessary.
And what type of swearing? Are we talking B words or F's?
Yeah, Like, a bloke mucking about with a weapon. You bloody daft bum. So he said, do you realise what you're effing well doing? You could kill somebody. He says, oh, I'm not here for my own sake. I'm here to tell you the right way of doing it. And things like that. And or this barrack room, is that effing well dirty? Get it cleaned. It'll be your weekend. You know, you'll lose and all this business. Because when you've done the barrack room, cleaning it, after a number of weeks when you've been doing the barrack room, I think it's about after about 5 or 6 weeks, you got your first weekend pass to go home. And that meant a lot because you've been stuck in this barrack, bloke shouting at you, and you wanted to get home. And if you wasn't up to scratch, you was kept and kept until you was up to scratch, then you could lose a day's weekend pass type of thing to get home.
Now, what would you do on a weekend pass? Now you
mentioned? Well, come home.
What was that like coming back after?
Well, of course. You thought you was Jack the Lad. You got your uniform.
Oh, you'd be in uniform?
Yeah. I've got a photograph in that album with two of the lads who were just going to go into your good uniform. Essex flags up, your berry with a badge on it. And, of course, the army was still in people's minds because not long after the Second World War. And you walked down the street there and you felt, you know, Jack the Lad type of thing. You go to a dance hall, you might put your uniform and go on a dance hall, and the girls would come up and say, well, what's that, you know, what you're in and all this business. And that's where I met the wife at a dance hall type of thing. And what's that? But as happened in gone past, you wasn't allowed anywhere. But we came home and we felt proud of the uniform, going home, coming back. Because we didn't live far from Brentwood, we could either go by train or hitchhike. Some of us used to hitchhike, save the money.
So what about recreations generally then? I mean, you know, what would you do? Canteen, I suppose, was one.
Yeah, a canteen.
What did the canteen offer you?
Darts. What they call it? Russian billiards with the little mushrooms. Table tennis. Used to be able to make up a football team. Bit of quiz nights and all that business. And also the local army cinema came round and put on a film once a week.
And was a canteen dry?
It did have beer on it, but she was only allowed to drink so much, like two cans of beer or one can of beer a night type of thing.
Now, what about dance? Would you go out in the local town? You know, were you given
Brentwood and that?
Brentwood, yeah.
No, never much here.
One thing is, what were the dance halls like then? I should have asked you before, because dance halls are something that's gone.
Yeah. Well, I mean, you walk into a dance hall, probably with a couple of mates, or you plan to meet them up there. You walk in. The boys used to sit on one side of the dance hall, and the girls used to sit on the other side of the dance hall type of thing. And the band to start up with the Wolves, or it'd be Records, and you'll have like a MC there, or a bloke who runs the oysters. Now, come on, boys and girls, get together. Boys go over and ask girls, girls go over and ask boys. It's a waltz, do your own thing type of thing. And that's how it used to, then you used to meet up, and they used to say, well, see you next week, or see, I used to say, sorry, no, I'm in the forces, I'm training and all this bit. If I went out in a suit and somebody, you met somebody and they say, coming up again, well, I can make it Saturday night, Sunday I've got to pack my stuff because I'm, where are you going? I said, back to me training in the army. Oh, you in the army? And they didn't seem to want to know. If you was in the Navy or the Air Force, they just didn't seem to want to know type of thing. Because they knew then that you didn't get much money.
So the dance halls, would you drink? Was there a bar in the dance hall?
Mainly teas, tea and coffee. But if you went to like where we used to go, the East Ham swimming bars, then they had a bar. And that's where a lot of trouble used to...
Now what sort of trouble would you get in a dance hall?
You might tread on somebody's heel or back into them or bump them, and the bloke turn around and say, watch what you're doing, you mug, and all this business. And who are you talking to? And he'll push you, you push him, and there'll be a bit of a scuffle and all that. Or they may spill a cup of tea, or that's my bird you're with. Take your hands off of her, you know, just because you're in uniform and all this. And that's how things used to start. It never got major type of thing, you know, so...
Now, what about the pubs? Would you go to the pubs?
Yes. Yeah, I went with my dad, my uncles, because my Uncle Freddie was with the Island Division out in, where is it? Cool. Tobruk, around that way. And he used to take me in and have a drink with them, and the blokes used to come up, hello, lad, come and have a drink with us, you know. Nice to see a young lad in uniform. And the old boys in the pub, you've got the respect, and they used to start telling you, you know, what they've done in the forces and where they've been, and they used to say, don't take that notice of him, he's a load of old bull, you know. And it used to be amicable, you know.
Now, so how did your training progress then? You got 10 weeks of it.
Yeah.
So that's June through to August, about.
Well, while we was down there, interrupt you, I don't know if it's in Canvey floods were.
Oh, tell us about that.
Well, the bad weather, floods were on, and they asked for volunteers.
Is this the big time when the East Coast flooded?
Yeah, yeah.
And what actually happened for you then?
Well, we was asked to go down and load up sandbags to bridge up the wall and all that. And some of the lads...
Whereabouts? On Canvey Island?
On Canvey Island itself. And some of the lads got to drag in dead cattle and all this business and help people out of their homes type of thing.
But you didn't?
No, we was mainly sandbagging and filling in the trenches. You saw the animals and... sort of disaster of the houses and that, you know.
So you were there mainly after the floods?
Yeah, banking up. Because we were put on standby. Then they said, we want volunteers, he said. You and you are volunteering. What for, Sergeant? Fill sandbags. He said it'll take you in good stead from wherever you're going, type of thing, you know.
Anything else about the floods?
No, that's about all.
Now, any incidents during your training, you know, just out of the ordinary things?
No, not really. I mean, other than that bloke who tried to hang himself and the bloke who washed it, but other than that, it went well. The only worst thing was when we was doing, when you get so far ahead, you start training for your passing out parade.
Tell me about that.
Well, you dress up in your number ones, uniforms, all highly polished. They do the drill, then you start doing your arms drill with a bayonet unscathed out of the scabbard. And you're doing tension, slope arms, carry arms, and all that, present arms. Well, one bloke, he slung his rifle a bit, what's his name, and it pierced the other bloke's arm next door to him because he went too far over and went into his uniform and pierced his arm. But it wasn't too bad type of thing. And you do that, drilling and all that, then you... practice march past. There'll be a corporal or a sergeant on a stand, and you have to march in full uniform with your arms and bayonets fixed. And you march past him, you learn to do eyes right or eyes left, and he salutes and you march back, band's playing, turn around and come back. And that's getting you ready for your passing out of 10 weeks. Then you do, during that time, you do a basic skills test to see whether you want to be, if you're fit enough to drive, be an officer, be a cook, because I was wanted to be a cook. So I'd done a little bit of training as a cook, but the sergeant
during the basic training.
Yeah, during the basic, they give you an assessment test.
So what was it? Your aptitude? Well, aptitude or assessment test?
Well, they kind of set an IQ test. You know, does this what's name would the answer be A, B? First of all, like that, then they say, well, what are you interested in? You say cooking, take you down to the cookout. Well, those couple of them top, what we call toffee noses, got selected for an officer's course because they had the grades. And they went away and two of them came back unsuitable because they led the blokes into a minefield. So there was a, but they may be suitable for NCOs later on.
Now, what happened on yours? You wanted to be a cook. Well, yeah, what happened to you when you went for the test?
Well, I went down to the cookhouse. He said, I suppose you can make a cup of tea. I said, yeah. I suppose you can, what can you do? I said, well, chicken, toast, bread, cook bacon, cook eggs. I said, I'm sure I can make that pom you slap into our dishes and all that. Cause it was so he said, yeah, all right. He said, your heart's into it, he said, but now what you've got to do is wait until you finish your basic training, then reapply to go on a catering course. So then we had to wait and do our basic training.
So you're always being told the same thing.
Yeah.
One day you might be able to train as a cook.
But or a driver, or, yeah.
At the same time, you're always progressing along to being an ordinary infantryman.
That's right, yeah.
Anything else? So you've done your aptitude test. Anything else?
No, just...
So what about the passing out parade? What was that actually like? Do you remember it? Were your parents there?
Yes. Well, we was up early, 5 o'clock. The barracks were cleaned, polished, because your parents came back to see where you were sleeping. You was up all night ironing and pressing with the iron, brown paper. Your brassos were cleaned and polished. Your hat was, what's named, dove dust. Your badge over the left eye inch above this and everything. The sergeant came in, looked all round you, made sure your rifle was polished, your blanco was 100%. Then they done a run-through, as though you was going to go on the parade. Because in Worley Barracks, there was the road there. You come out of the barracks, crossed over the road to where the MT sheds are, all the lorries and that, and there's a big square there. And that was all set up with chairs, a dais is for the officers and that. Your platoon sergeant, Tom Francis, he was there. Medals up, his red sash, his stick, and we all done, all the old lot went through, all columns, A, B, C and D, all columns marched through. When I was satisfied, you went and had a cup of tea, but you held your cup out like that, put something in front of you so you didn't spill it, make sure nobody tread on your shiny boots, give them a dust. Then he said, right, A company, B company, on parade, and you all got on parade, stood to attention, they come round, taking bits of fluff off of you, make sure your hat was on, the brass is on, nothing was undone, buttons all done up. And then he'll say, right, parade churn. Slope arms, so slope the arms. Move to the right in threes, right turn. So you march around, he said, band, are you ready? So the band strikes up. Parade, by the front, quick march. So you march around and he says, left wheel round. Come up to the entrance going out the gate. The guard commander was at the gate with all his guard on guard. You had the regimental colours. Right turn. Then the sergeant said, now remember lads, shoulders back, walk tall, your parents are looking at you. And you start to, you know, get a bit red and a bit, what's the name, he says, you're doing lovely, take it easy, watch the person in front. So as we come past the guard room, all the guard presented arms to us because the colours marched across the room. The band was playing away, and all the people stood up in their seats. Because you don't recognise your mum and dad, because you march down, march to the head, stop. The old colonel gives the old blah, 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 blah. These lads have gone through their basic training. Soon they will be all over the world. Some will be in conflict. So he said, now you may stand or sit as the troops go in full review past you. And you get the regimental sergeant mate come out there, stamp his boots like RS in Britain. Parade, parade, parade will advance. Quick, march. And the band strikes up, your shoulders go back, you march right past the what's number, and he says, eyes, right. You all turn eyes right. Colonel saluting there. marched round him, round in front of the people, and as you go round in front of the people, he says, pay respect to your parents, prayed, eyes, right, so you all turn, as you're turning, you're trying to look for somebody, and they're all clapping, tears are rolling down. Then he marched to the end, he said, prayed, halt, prayed, left turn. He said, thank you very much, gentlemen, all the credit to your country, your family. Prayed, we'll now dismiss. Prayed, dismiss, big shout goes up, and all the parents come out, go back, have a cup of tea, take them back to the rooms and show them where you slept and all that, on the old hard beds and all your kits laid out. Yeah, my mum and dad were, and my brother, and that was quite pleased, yeah.
Was there a competition between the squads?
Yes.
Tell us about that.
Well, it was based on drill, barrack rooms, kit inspection, firing, PT, and general behaviour.
Now, was it important to you, the competition? Because it's one of the big things the British Army, it believes in competition. Well, I mean,
when you've got, when you've done that, you've got extra drink, but you also got an extra day's leave. So the platoon that was the best platoon, they got extra time off and they got extra drink.
And how did you do in the competition for your squad?
Well, I think we were about average.
So you didn't win it. But it did make you work harder, didn't
it? Oh yes, yeah, because you had a goal. You were thinking that extra day or that extra weekend off type of thing, you know.
Now, so that's the end, and that would be about August, you think?
Yeah.
So where next? What happens next?
Next, we was told that, we was given a speak by the colonel. We said, what's that? He said, now from here, he said, some of you will be transferred to other units. Some will be going on courses, he said. And some of you will be doing basic training to go to Korea. So we thought, what a bloody hell's Korea? You never heard of it. No. So he said, and from here you will be going to Germany to do a basic course in Germany. And we thought, cool, Germany, going abroad. The only work time I've been aboard is on the Woolwich Ferry type of thing. You know. So we came home for 14 days leave, then came back to the barracks and we were shipped off to Germany via the Hook of Holland.
September, would it?
Yeah, the Hook of Holland.
And who were you joining there?
Stayed with the Essex there.
Which battalion? Would you be in a battalion now?
First battalion.
And where were they?
Stationed at Wuppertal.
Any name of the barracks or is it just Wuppertal?
Wuppertal, it was a SS barracks at Wuppertal. I don't know what the name of the barracks was, but it was a German SS block. Beautiful place. Hot showers, lovely rooms.
Well, let's do that first. What were the barracks like, you know?
Very good, excellent. There was more like flats than there was barracks. We wasn't used to them, you know. Everything was there, up pipes, central heated, everything.
It was better than...
100% better, yes.
And... what about the trip out there? It is your first time abroad, isn't it?
Well, we loaded up on a train, went down to Harwich. While we was going down to Harwich, they came round with soup on the train to give us something to eat. Got to Harwich, went up on a troop ship. Bit of a rough crossing, a few of us were sick.
Were you sick?
No, believe it or not, I wasn't. I was lucky. And crossed to Hook of Holland, picked up another train there. On that train, they give us sandwiches and soup. Then made our way to Wuppertal.
Now, what was your reception? You're joining the regulars here. This is, it's your first real unit. What were they like when you first...
Well, here come the new boys. You'll soon get used to it. I said, remember, the new ones always get the dirty jobs. Type of thing.
And which company were you in?
B Company, 8 Platoon.
And who stood out when you first arrived? I mean, is it your platoon sergeant or...?
Regimental Sergeant Major.
Remember his name?
No, I found I can't. No.
But what stood out about him?
He was fairly tall. He looked more like a guardsman. He said, now, you arrived at Wuppertal. The eyes of the German people are upon you. He said, so are mine. He said, work well, play hard, and you should do well. Get on the wrong side of me, and you'll know it. And he welcomed us there. He said, now you will be going to your blocks. So we went from the blocks, put all our kit up and that, and that was the start of that in Wuppertal.
Now, who was in your company, in your, well, 8th Platoon in B Company, who was?
Roy and Brian Palsy and Stanley Harper. They're the ones we stayed together with.
Now what about the
some of the others were there, yeah, yeah.
What about the officer and NCO?
No, they stayed.
No, I mean, when you got there, I mean, that met you.
Yeah, Lieutenant Spooner. I do remember that name.
What was he like?
He was quite nice. His father was something to do with the Northampton Times, and that's where we eventually was going to wind up as. But he was in the Essex Regiment, because you all start off then.
And what was he like as an officer?
Very good. He was more of a college, clean-shaven, good-looking chap. He was the officer type, you know, swagger stick, cap.
Yeah, very good. Talk to him?
He came round and got to know all our backgrounds and what we can do, what we can't do. And then he was, you know, he put you like, I understand you're quite good on a Bren gun. You're quite good on the 2-inch mortar. I understand you like driving, and sorted them out from there, type of thing.
And what did he sort out for you?
Number 2 on a Bren gun and 2-inch mortar. And if necessary, emergency standby company cook.
So what was the job on the number 2 on the Bren gun?
Well, what you done, you carried the spare barrels and you carried extra ammunition, and if the Bren gunner got knocked out, you took his place. And you called alongside of him, undone the barrel, which got hot, replaced a new barrel, tap him, and he carried on firing. Then when he ran out of ammunition, you put a new mag on for him.
And what about your other role on the mortar? Were you number 2 on that as well?
I was number 1 on the 2-inch mortar. I carried a 2-inch mortar, small drain pipe, and 8 bombs, and the other chaps in the platoon also carried magazines for the Bren gun and also extra bombs for the mortar.
And so your job was to fire it?
Yes.
We'll perhaps come to the training on that. So what was life like when now you're with the regulars? Because you're there for a course, aren't you?
Yeah. Well, it was quite interesting. I mean, we got time off to go into Wuppertal. We done guard.
Tell us what guard duty was like.
There was about 10 of you. And each platoon, out of 10 men in each platoon, done guard duties. And you reported to the guard commander in the guardhouse, which is at the front of the gate, big gates. You done so many hours outside, so it was like 2 on duty, 4 off. You done patrols around the camp. You done patrols outside the camp. And that was for 24 hours. And you was there, checking parked people in, checking people out.
And did they have a stick man system?
Yes. I've got that.
Can you explain what it is for them? Because they don't know.
A stick man is the smartest bloke on parade for the guard. And what you've done in a platoon, you used to lend people, it wasn't always your own gear that you used. It was like somebody had a nice pair of boots, somebody had a nice webbing and all this business, a pressed uniform, and you was inspected by the guard commander and an officer, and they would come round and make notes. Well, I've got a picture in there of me as a stickman, and I was very surprised when I got pulled out, because it means an honour for the platoon, and that honour for the platoon sets you in motion. And once you become a guard stick orderly, you walked around with a white belt, a white sash, and you was the commanding officer's. If he wanted a messenger to go, say, like, to the arms store, to the cookhouse, or get somebody, you walked around, and that was your job for 24 hours, carrying messages. And nobody could touch you. You didn't get guard duty. You didn't get fatigues. You didn't get cookhouse duties. Nothing. You was, rest of the day, all you had to do was stand by, say, like, in the naffy, where they could get hold of you, or in the guard room. That was a proud moment, that was.